Okay, so let's start. This is a new season. We finished last year, Be'ezrat Hashem, studying the Rambam versus Ramban and almost all the parashiyot in the Torah. I think we did a great job. So trying to think of what to do this year. And I ran a blank. So instead, what we're going to do is little pieces. I thought I'd call this table Torah, or Torah is for the table. And the idea would be that I would basically go over some of the various pieces of Divrei Torah that I found in Sfarim over the years and try to find smaller pieces, no necessarily unifying theme, but hopefully give us a little bit of a potpourri of different mefarshim, different ideas, and maybe things that can spark your interest and things that you could say over at the table with family or with friends or just think about to yourself. All right? So let's try it this week, at least. So we'll start with my Alter Zeta, the Chatam Sofer, Rav Moshe Schreiber. Of course, very, very well known 18th century Gaon, one of the Gadol HaDor, I think. And this is actually a comment that I had been thinking about on Simchas Torah, because I did a Siyum on Tzvas Emes, and there was something that came up about the sin of the trees, the sin of the fruit, really. And someone asked me about it, and I tried to cite a Chatam Sofer, and I couldn't forget, I couldn't remember it. So here it is. So this first comment over here on the right, can everybody see it? Chatam Sofer? Good. So it says, Vayomer Elohim tachi and then it says, so Perish Rashi, I know this is Rashi script, but I'm going to help everybody with it. Perish Rashi, he lost akin. So this is a midrash that Rashi quotes, that when the Torah describes what Hashem ordered, he ordered Eitz Pri Oseh Pri, a fruit tree that makes fruit. But instead, what actually happens is an Eitz Oseh Pri. So Rashi says, according to the midrash, this means that what Hashem wanted was a fruit-flavored tree which made fruit, meaning the tree itself would taste like fruit. You could eat it. But instead, the trees said, that's not a good idea. Presumably because if you make a fruit-flavored tree, what's going to happen?
Somebody's going to eat me.
Somebody's going to eat the tree. Then you're not going to have any fruit. So the trees said, that's a bad idea. And they changed the plan. And they became the trees that we know, the regular trees that are not edible. And they make fruit. That's Rashi. So he says, therefore, when man was cursed, the earth was cursed as well. You remember after Adam Arishon sins, sorry, after Cain and Hevel sin, really. After Cain and Hevel sin, it says that the earth will no longer bring forth its plenty. Like it's not going to be useful. Also for Adam. The land is not going to be as fruitful as it was originally going to be. So the Chatam Sofer wants to know, what's this idea? Why is it that Hashem waited to curse or punish the land until man was cursed? Why not punish the land immediately? Say, hey, I told you to do one thing, you did the other. I'm going to be mekalel you right away. Instead, he waited until Adam and Cain sinned, and then he punished the land. Why is that? So the Chatam Sofer answers, Yesh lomar, d'nei shehayta ru'i bar onshin. The answer is that if Hashem punishes the land, what happens? Who else gets punished along with the land?
The
Man.
occupants.
Men, it's not the land does not exist in a vacuum. If Hashem punishes the land by itself, then man is going to be punished as well because it's going to be harder for him to harvest the land. So we see over here that there's a recognition that sometimes Hashem might want to mete out justice to something, but it's not the right time for it, or it's going to have a negative impact on other people, and therefore he can't do that punishment. But once the other people deserve a punishment as well, then he can mete out that punishment. This is an interesting view on God's justice. Sometimes he'll withhold his justice if it will negatively impact people who don't deserve it. So sometimes you have to be careful how you punish. Okay, here's another one. Oh, yesh lefarish. This is on the same issue. The chayt Adam. This is what I was thinking about on Simchas Torah. The chayt Adam ba al yedei chayt haaretz. He says that the Chatam Sofer says that the sin of Adam Harishon, of Adam and Chava, was bound up with the sin of the trees. Why? Da Adam shachal meitzah da ta'elo terutz. Man had an answer he could have given. Adam could have said to God, listen, you said that when we eat the fruit that we're going to die. But look, Chava ate from the fruit and didn't die. So yeah, Chava, maybe she made a mistake. She shouldn't have done what she did. But Adam could turn to God and say, listen, what did I mean, it seems like everything's fine. So he says, Val korchach, sarich lomar, deikar chet ohaya, shehosif al divrei Hashem. Amar velo tigubo. Really, he says, the problem wasn't so much that he ate from the tree. The problem was that he added on to the tzivui that Hashem gave. What did Hashem tell Adam Rishon?
Don't eat.
Don't eat. And what did he tell Chava?
Don't touch.
He said, don't touch. Because when he did that, that was disastrous. Because then the Nachash pushed Chava onto the tree, compares Rashi the Kaman, and then once she touched the tree, then she realized that nothing was going to happen.
Just a second. Was it Adam or the Nachash who told Chava don't touch?
Adam.
It was Adam who said don't touch.
According to the Midrash, Adam told her not to touch.
Okay.
Says, but that's also strange. Why are we blaming Adam Arishon for making a geder? That's how the Chachamim, you know, make their fortune, right? They make gedarim. That's their whole bread and butter. What's wrong with a little siyag? What's wrong with a little bit of a geder? Why is Adam being held accountable for telling Chava not to touch the tree? That was a good idea. Tzarech lomar, delefi anira, amar la shalatika afilu ba'etz. That's the thing. Adam told her not to touch the tree. Dimlokin, lo ya lenachash makom lefatot, aideish dechipa ba'etz. Dechipa ba'etz. V'lasor anigia ba'etz, deze mishmeret la mishmeret. What happened? Adam told her not to touch the etz. And that's what the Nachash pushed her into. The Nachash didn't, you know, push her hand into one of the fruit. He pushed her into the eitz. And Adam told her not to touch the eitz. Now, what's wrong with that? There's something very wrong with that.
Is it a geder on a geder?
It is. That's a mishmeret. La mishmeret, a gzeira, la gzeira. And we have a rule. We don't make a gzeira la gzeira. When the rabbis make a rule and they say, listen, because we don't want you to do this iser d'oraita, we're not going to even let you get close. You can't do this action which is close to that iser d'oraita. But then the rabbis are not allowed to say, now you can't even do this thing that might lead you to do this action that might lead you to do this iser d'oraita. That's called the gzeira la gzeira, and the rabbis are not allowed to do that. But that's what Adam did, because Adam told her that she can't touch the eitz. And he should have told her she can't touch the pri. The die the isur negiyat pri. Vasa shalokedin. He did something wrong. They know it's in siag la siag. So now, what's the Chatam Sofer going to say? Why did Adam do what he did?
Because the tree sinned.
Ibra di yesh lomar dezeh shayachim ein tama eitz v'pir yoshaveh. Says, Adam's mistake was that he thought, well, I don't know if he thought, but Adam's mistake was that he told Chava not to touch the eitz. And he really should have told her not to touch the tree, the fruit. But if the eitz had still had the tama pri, then touching the eitz would have been just as bad as touching the pri, and Adam would have been correct.
Adam.
שהוסיף שלא כדין, ובא מכשול על ידי הארץ, לפיכך כשאת האדם נתקלה גם הארץ על עוונה. ואת אישה בדברי המדרש. He says, that's why the chait of the tree and the chait of Adam are bound up together. Because if the tree had not changed the plan, then Adam's sivui to Chava of not touching the tree would have been fine. It would have been correct.
Might we say that Adam did not know that the trees had changed the plan?
It's very possible.
We have to assume that Adam knew that the trees had changed his plan.
We don't have to assume it. It makes much more sense if he knew. But it could also be that he didn't know, and that was just an unfortunate mistake that he made. It's a nice vortlach.
Now, this Mishnah has, this Midrash, by the way, has bothered me for a while. It's hard for me to put my mind around the fact that a tree has a power to make its own decision and say, Hashem wanted me to taste like the fruit, but I'm not going to do it. So, sorry, Hashem, I'm not listening to you.
Are you okay? Are you okay with this? Are you okay with the moon telling God that you can't have two stars in the sky that are the same size?
Say that again?
But the moon didn't cause the sun to become smaller.
Yeah, but the moon's still talking and saying something. We are assuming, I assume, that these midrashim are somewhat mythical or metaphorical. They have to be taken seriously. They have deep messages. But I don't know that the tree talked in some way, or I could be wrong. Who knows? Maybe it did. Maybe the trees have free will. I have no idea. No clue. Either way is fine with me, honestly. Okay, so that's another one. Here's one more, I thought, and then maybe we'll move on to another Perush. The Chatam Sofer says something nice over here, something you could say over at the Shabbos table. Says Eitz Hadaat Haya Ra'ui La'Adam Harishon. The Arizal, he's quoting the Arizal over here. The Arizal says that Adam Harishon made such a tragic mistake. If only he had waited 3 more hours, if only he had waited until Shabbos came in, he would have made kiddush on the juice from the fruit of the Eitz Hadaat. It wasn't that he was never going to eat from the Eitz Hadaat. It was simply that he was not to eat from the Eitz Hadaat yet. But come Shabbat, he was going to eat from it. But he didn't wait. Hainu, ilu imtin ad Shabbat, v'az ha'ochel gam Eitz Chaim b'chay la'olam, v'nir li remez, kamru haya te'ina chita etrog yayin. So the Gemara says that the fruit of the Eitz Hadaat was either a te'ina chita etrog or Geffen, Yayin, one of those four. Ubarur da'akol amiti. So the Chatam Sofer says, really, they're all correct. Shaya oto apri kalul me'arbatan. It was a different fruit. It was a special fruit that was made out of all four. Tan te'ina chita pri eitz hadar ve'yayin. It had all four tastes. This is a fruit that, not crazy, it's a fruit that we don't have. A fruit that tastes like all four of them. And then he says, roshe tevot. If you take the acrostic, teina, chita, yayin, hadar is the etrog. What do you get? Roshei tevot, tichye, taf, chet, yud, he. Not only that, gematria makolel, if you take the word tichye, you do the gematria, and then you add on one more for the kolel, for the word in its entirety, gematria shabbaton. Omar, b'shabbat, ayachai me'apriyahu. He would have lived from that fruit. Oh, it's geschmack, no? Jake, you love it. You love it. You're going to tell Audrey all about the tichyeh.
I love all acronyms. That's the way we prove Judaism.
Jake, it was coming just for that. It was worth coming just for that, Jake.
I want to tell you, it sounds like I'm at Esha Torah. What were those series called? That they have the, you see, it says Mona Lisa, Da Vinci right here. You see, God exists.
Okay, but this one's a nice one. You have the four fruits, it becomes Tichya. And if that wasn't good enough, according to the Arizal, who says that if he would have drank it on Shabbos, he would have lived forever. Shabbaton. Do with it what you will. Okay. Let's go on. We'll fast forward a little bit in time to the Hamikdavar, the Netziv. Okay, 1900s, sorry, 1800s rather. The Netziv of Elazhin. So in his commentary, he says on the words Bereshit Ba'Elohim, everybody wants to figure out, you know, what the names of God mean. Yudke Vavke, Elohim. So here he says, Elohim is Mashma'o Dayan. It means a judge. Okay? Now we know that because sometimes the word Elohim is actually used in a non-divine context for judges, right? Or for angels. So he says, Omnam, Kemo Chukot HaTorah Nikraim Din, Kemo Ken Nikraim Din, Gam Chukot HaTeva. He says the fact is that we use the word din not only for justice, but also for the rules of nature, for the laws of nature, so to speak. On the pasuk Yodea Tzadik Din Dalim, it says Dalim here is referring to dogs almost, that they have very little mezonot. It's talking about science and nature and biology. So he says, "Veina davar b'tarat onesh el hateva kach hu v'hu nikrad din." So the Netziv says, based on that, we can say that when we refer to God as Elohim, as a judge, we don't mean that he's like making these moral judgments, deciding if you're a good guy or a bad guy, deciding, you know, using subjective rules, but rather that it's like a law of science. These are laws of just like laws of science are immutable. We just have to accept them. We don't argue with the fire if it burns us. So too, the laws of the Torah and of morality are not about punishment. When you get a punishment, it's not a punishment, but rather a consequence. And that's the meaning of Elohim. That's the way that God runs the world. How about this one? V'hinei tov ma'od. Okay. What day does it say? V'hinei tov ma'od.
Yom Shishi.
Yom Shishi, the sixth day after man is created. V'hinei tov ma'od. Levarash kol prat tov b'fnei atzmo l'fi ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Od heima b'tzeruf kol nivraim yachad tov ma'od. So the first explanation the Netziv gives over here for why it says tov ma'od as opposed to just tov is because here it's the sixth day. Hashem has finished creating things. Now you can say tov ma'od because everything is working together. There's tov when something is working, when each element is individual, but then there's tov ma'od when everything is working together. That's the ma'od. The fact that there is this unity or synergy rather, a synergy between everything. Shekol achad mashlim ha-chaseron shel ha-sheni. Each one fills the lack of the other. U'bazeh ha-lashon tov ma'od nichlal ma she'yesh mazikim ba'olam. And this is how we can explain how Chazal say tov ma'od. They say a couple of things. One of the things they say is that ma'od refers to death. And another one they say that it refers to mazikim, which is demons. Why would you say tov ma'od refers to these things that are evil? The answer is that even evil has a role to play in the world, which is actually only understood in the context of the larger system. You would never look at evil and just say, that's tov. You can't. But when you look at the larger scheme, then occasionally you can say that evil plays a role, and even death plays a role in that scheme. They're for the betterment of the entire species and the rest of the world. And then he actually cites himself. He quotes the Bir Agra, and then he says, by the way, take a look at what I wrote in Bamidbar on the Pasuk, Tova Haaretz Ma'od Ma'od. So as a treat, I looked in Bamidbar on the words that the land of Israel is Tov Ma'od. So actually, before we even look at it, what would you expect? What would he say about why Hashem describes Eretz Yisrael as Tova Haaretz Ma'od Ma'od? Twice Ma'od.
Good.
Because it was God-given?
Okay, because it was God-given. But here's the thing you have to know about the Netziv. One of the things that I really, really enjoyed about learning the Hamak Davar was that the Netziv was so consistent and systematic that occasionally you would look at a pasuk and you would know, even before you looked at the parish, you could know what he was going to say, because it includes a word that he spent a good deal of time on somewhere else and said, this is what this word means, and this is how we should understand it. So you open up this pasuk and you say, okay, well, how would the Netziv explain this? And you could actually figure it out. So in this context, what do you think? How would the Netziv explain the phrase, V'hinei ha'aretz tova ma'od ma'od? Anyone take a stab at it?
It's got bad things in it as well.
Okay. Okay, that's a good step, Barbara.
And between, you know, the combination of the good and the bad makes it very good.
Very good. So now, Barbara, I want to ask you a question.
Go on.
In what way could bad things about the land be good? How could deficiencies in the land be a good thing?
Because there's no natural water, so we're dependent on rain, so we have to daven for rain.
Beautiful.
It reminds us that we're...
Beautiful. Excellent. Okay, so it's very, very close to what the Nitziv says. He says, Hein be'emet tova ha'aretz mod mod, b'meh she'hashgachat midit shama. Because God's divine providence, so this is taking into account what Barbara, to Barbara, Barbara Breitstein and Barbara Grant, what Barbara Breitstein mentioned, that the land, it belongs to God, and there's divine providence here. But why is that important? Kasher yevuar b'mikra ha'samoch, hi tova ma'od, she'ein ha'tov sheba, machti harbe. Because the land is naturally good, but not in a way that causes people to sin. What do I mean? Ki hashgacha sholetet biyoter la'anish. Because God pays attention, and when people do bad things, so then he uses the land to punish them. Umimela hargashat tov harbe, and therefore we feel the goodness. Why? The truth is, I cut out a little bit of what he said, which might make it clearer. He basically says that one of the great problems with God rewarding people is that when he rewards them and they enjoy themselves, what ends up happening?
They get complacent.
They get complacent. They get full of themselves. And they kick. We read this in Parashat Hazino, I think it was. Or is it the Baruch Hava? Yishman Yisharun Vayiv'at. That Bnei Yisrael get fat and they kick. Or the way that I always like to put it, the words V'achalta V'savata show up three times in Chumash. What word shows up after the word V'savata? So one time the word afterwards uzu v'irachta. One time the next words are hishamer. Tinshma. No. Shemulacha ben yiftel avavchem. And the other time is v'shachachta et Hashem Elokecha. Meaning, naturally speaking, after a person becomes full and enjoys themselves, they become... Basically, they say, I don't need anybody. I don't need God. That's the natural reaction. So if the land of Eretz Yisrael was perfect and was filled with all these ma'adanim and was a total paradise, then what would happen? People would come in, they'd enjoy themselves, and they'd forget God. But Hashem did a trick. He said, the land is going to be wonderful as long as you're wonderful. And so when the land is deficient, when it's bad, it's really for our good, because it reminds us that we are dependent on God. And that's what he says. That's the goodness of the land, that it's dependent on Hashkacha.
Might we also say that the bad helps us appreciate the good even more? Without the bad, I don't know what's good.
You could say that. Certainly you could say that. I have a friend who got married, and they moved to Baltimore, which is where his family was living. His wife was from Chicago. He was from Baltimore. And I remember afterwards, a couple of years later, they moved to Chicago. And I saw him when he was in Chicago. And he was talking about how great it was and how happy he was. And I said, well, what about Baltimore? He says, Baltimore was terrible. I said, you know, Chicago's okay. I don't think it's paradise. I think it's a really good thing that you started out in Baltimore. Because if you hadn't been to Baltimore, you wouldn't have appreciated Chicago as much as you do. Chicago's all right. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not Brooklyn, right? So you have to move. It's a good idea. When you get married, move somewhere really bad. And that way, go to a really bad apartment, a really small, dingy, smelly apartment with leaks and mold and everything. And then move into a nice three-bedroom apartment. And then, oh, that's good living. It's a good idea. Okay. The last tip that I just wanted to look at was just a nice little outline, he says. In the story of the sons of Adam. You know, Adam had three sons. Many people think he only had two sons, which gets confusing. People say, oh, he had Cain and Hevel. And then I ask, well, do we come from Cain or Hevel? And the answer is, Neither one. Well, we definitely don't come from Hevel, and we definitely come from Sheit, but we also come a little bit from Cain on the mother's side, because Noach's wife was probably a from the Cain side. But okay, fine. Nimtza Sipor Kol HaParasha. He says basically at the end of the parasha, Shadam Rishon Holid Gimel Banim. He had three sons. Mishunim Bahalichot Chayim. Kayin Ayadam Pashut Veinu Mevakesh Motarot. Kayin was a person who was very simple, and he wasn't interested in like the finer things in life, which is a good way of explaining why he didn't. Why he? What did he fail at? What did he do wrong? Kayin.
He failed at bringing a quality korban.
Right. So why didn't he bring a high quality korban?
It's not important to him.
Yes, yeah, because maybe because he didn't think it was important to bring a high quality korban. He was like, look, you know, we can get by on the very basic things. I want to give a gift to God. I'll give him a basic gift. What's the big deal? Hevel he'adam hama'ale ve'efrati lefi erech da'at enoshi. But Hevel was a little bit more, you know, a little. He enjoyed the finer things in life. V'shneim lo yigiu le'tachlit ha'briyah, but neither one of them was perfect. Sheit haya adam hama'ale amiti tachlit ha'briyah. Sheit was the purpose. You have to have derech eretz before Torah. You have to have a kind of hevel to prepare the world before you have a sheit. Okay, that's he wants to say later on. By the way, that Shem, Ham, and Yafet are the same story. Okay, let's see. What do we have time
for? Can I ask?
Yes.
How did we come from? How did we come from any of them? If there were, there have to have been other people in the world. There have to have been women, you know, for them to marry.
So Midrash says that both Cain and Hevel were born with twins, and that they reproduced with their sisters. Olam chesed yibaneh. Gemara in Brachos also. Olam chesed yibaneh. It was necessary. It reminds us a little bit of Lot and his daughters, what they thought they needed to do.
Okay.
That was the way it had to happen. Okay. I wanted to do this part because it was cool. So the Barbanel, Rav Yitzchak Barbanel, this is, we're back in the 14th century now. So he says, V'lachein, da'ati ba'inyan ha'nachash. I want to talk about the nachash. V'toch ha'nesipur ha'zagid l'chapos, hu yisod ha'parasha hazot, I want to tell you about this story. It's interesting. The Abarbanel, by the way, I didn't put it over here, but the Abarbanel is the source, is the main source for the idea that the Rambam thought that the story of Adam and Chava was just a myth, that it didn't actually happen, that it was just a story. The Rambam never says that. It's often quoted in the name of the Rambam. He never says that at all. The Abarbanel says that the Rambam says it, even though the Abarbanel himself doesn't think that. He thinks that it actually happened. So he gets the Rambam in trouble for no reason. And since then, everybody just says, oh, the Rambam says this in the morning book. He doesn't. You can quote me on that.
Does anyone else say it?
Well, Rabbi Sachs says that the Rabbanel says that the Rambam says it, which is true. But does anybody else say it? Yeah, I'm sure some other people. Yeah, others say it. Yeah. Anyways, the Rabbanel, who does think it happened, so he needs to explain the story. I'll be pshat. So he says, "V'hu she'anachash lo diber klal el ha'isha." He says, what do we have? A talking serpent here? Do we have a talking serpent? I'll be pshat. So the Rabbanel says, no. He's not comfortable with that. So what is it? Ki lo ish dvarim hu. He doesn't talk. V'lazeh lo amar ha'katub b'nyano v'hiftach Hashem et pi anachash. K'mo she'amar ba'aton b'yulyam. Look, we only have one talking animal in Chumash, and it's Eddie Murphy. Okay? It's the donkey in Parshat Balak. There's no talking snake. Eddie Murphy is a reference to Shrek. Or maybe in Yavin. Fine. Shasham Babur Shayadi Borha Aton Kipshuto Valderach Pele. Look, it was pointed out, at least in that story, that this is an amazing thing, that the donkey is talking. But how come in this story we don't have Chava saying, whoa, you can talk? We don't have that. V'nachash lo amar shepetach et piv l'fisha lo diber klal.
Sorry, isn't there something about the difference that the Adam is a medaber? That's the distinguishing feature of man.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Which means that it's hard to understand, the Rabbanel claims, that the Nachash was talking, so he doesn't want it. So how do we explain? Because the Nachash talks in the Chumash. Did the Nachash speak? No, only with its actions. The Nachash crawled up the tree and ate from the fruit, which it wasn't supposed to be able to do. And Chava saw that and got funny ideas. She talked to herself. She got the idea from the Nachash. Nachash didn't speak to her. Sometimes we look out in the world and we see things and they have an impact on us. Impact that is outsized from what we're actually supposed to draw from them. Right? We get ideas. Well, derech, like we learn from animals, we get ideas.
Does the pasuk ever say "Vayomer Hanachash" or "Vayedaber Hanachash"?
Yeah, well, it says "Vayomer." It says "Vayomer" for sure.
Well, so why you're saying don't take that literally? Right?
Because it says it. The Torah doesn't make enough of a big deal out of it. If he really spoke, the Torah would have said "Vayiftach Hashem et pi Hanachash." You know, Chava would have been surprised. Like we don't get enough. It just says "Vayomer el Haisha."
But the Nachash wasn't forbidden. No, the Hashem.
So that's true and
didn't
not
forbid
true.
Forbid the Nachash to eat.
That's true and not true. We don't see anywhere that the animals are forbidden from eating anything. But what we do see is that they are told to eat specific things, and many of the Mefarshim say that this is on purpose. So, for example, over here it says. It says here. Vayomer here. Vayomer lemine natati lechem et kol esav zorei hazera asher al pnei haaretz ve et kol ha'etz asher bo pri et zorei hazera. Hashem says to Adam, you have anything from the ground and anything from the trees. They are only given the stuff growing on the ground. Yerek Esev. So the Nachash really did not have any business eating from the fruit. They were supposed to stay on the ground, but he didn't. Fine.
Can you scroll back to that pasuk where it says Vayomer?
There are two things that he says. Number one, he says, "Vayomer el Haisha, af ki amar alehem lo tochlu mikol eitz hagan."
Now, over here, it doesn't say who said it. "Vayomer el Haisha."
Okay, Vanachasha. Okay, fine.
"Vayomer el Haisha." I might interpret that as saying it wasn't Vanachash. We said before that.
But here it says, "Vayomer el Haisha."
That Adam had an extra gender. Maybe that's what they're referring to.
But it says here, "Vayomer Nachash al Aisha, lo motumutu."
Right? That was after. Okay.
So the Rabbanel says that Lav Davka Vayomer Nachash. He spoke with his actions. This is one of my favorite things. So you have, let me show you the psukim. After Adam gets in trouble for eating from the eights, he gets punished, of course. And he gets a stern talking to. And then he gets punished. And then Hashem says, we can't leave them in the gun. How do you read this pasuk? What is this saying? What does Hashem say about Adam?
He knows the difference.
And Adam has become like Hashem.
Yeah. So he says it like it's a bad thing. He is now like one of us to know good and bad. It's strange. The whole story with Eitz HaDaat is very strange in general. Would you rather know the difference between good and bad or not know the difference between good and bad?
Isn't there some explanation that that kind of knowing that Adam acquired meant that he could never do bad. It was like it took away his free will because he knew intrinsically.
And so I haven't heard that, but I have heard the opposite. The Ramban, for example, says that Adam did not have bechira before he ate from the tree because he just did what was right. And to a certain degree, the Rambam says the same thing. The Rambam says that before he ate from the Eitz HaDaat, he knew what was right and what was wrong. And after he ate from the Eitz HaDaat, he felt what was right and what was wrong. The problem with feeling what's right and what's wrong is that what's wrong feels really good.
Mm-hmm. This explanation conflicts with, I think it was in Itzir who said before, over here it says, Adam want Adam and Chava to live forever. I think was it in Itzir or the Chacham Sofer who said, if Adam had only waited a few hours, he could have made Kiddush on that fruit and then lived forever, which means it wasn't such a terrible thing.
These folks started at the wrong time. He ate at the wrong time, yeah. That gets really, really deep into what the Eitz HaDaat was, which I don't want to do. But what I do want to do is, I don't understand this part. He says, it sounds like he's saying, now Adam is like one of us to know good and bad. And so we have to kick him out. That's very strange. Now man is like God, or at least like the angels. He knows good and bad, and so we have to kick him out. Why? It's a good thing. Why is it bad to be like Hashem? So the Rabbi El says, very simple. You're reading the pasuk wrong. The proper way to read this pasuk is, "Hein Adam haya keachad mimenu." Man was like one of us. He really knew the difference between good and bad in a clear way, such that he would not make any mistakes. He used to know it, but now he doesn't. And now, now that he doesn't know the difference, now that he'll get confused, now we have to kick him out. I think it's brilliant. I really like what Rabbanel does over there with explaining what the hain means over there. Okay. I had a few more comments here. We're running out of time. One is in the Orach Chaim. Skip that one. Here. Kivo Shabbat. This is a really basic Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim says, this is quoted by all the Hasidic books, the Sfas Emes and the Kedushas Levi. They love to quote this Orach Chaim. צריך לדעת כוונת הכתוב במאמר זה. ונראה לפרש לפי מה שכתבנו למעלה, כי העולם היה חסר הקיום, עד שבאתה שבת ועמד העולם. What is the idea of Shabbat? It says Hashem, Hashem rested on Shabbat. What is it? What is the idea? So he says that the world was missing something until Shabbat came. But that doesn't make any sense, because Hashem didn't create anything on Shabbat. That's the whole point. ויחל על יום השישי.
So now one has to wonder, how did the world survive the days before Shabbat?
I think I skipped something here. Okay. All right. I think I skipped some significant things. Okay, so I'll say it outside. Basically, the Orach Chaim says that until Shabbat, the world was pretty much living on fumes. Okay? There was fumes. There was no fuel left. In other words, Hashem injected a little bit of fuel into the world at the beginning of time for 6 days. It was a timer. Mm-hmm. And it was running down. And then, in Bein Hashmashot of the last day, right before the electricity ran out and the screen just went blank, Hashem injected a little bit more. And we call that Shabbat. That's the energy of Shabbat that Hashem injects into the world and gives it exactly no more and no less than another 7 days from Shabbat until the next Friday. And every week Hashem does that. On Shabbat, he gives the koach for the rest of the week, for the coming week. And in this way, we get to be part of the creation of the world. That's what the Archaim goes on to say. He says, when we bring in Shabbat and we are Me'id on Friday night through the Kiddush about Shabbat, we are helping God recreate the world, give more energy for the whole week. Like I said, this is a comment that's quoted by all the Hasidic books. Very, very basic idea that the world is created from Shabbat to Shabbat. And that's the power that we inject into the world on a Friday night. I wanted to show you this. Okay.
So, sorry, can you just, I like that one. Can you do that again? Where do we see that it doesn't have the koach? Where does he get it from, the original sources, or he just makes that up?
He has a bunch of questions that he asks, including, what does it mean when we say that when you make Kiddush, you become a shutaf, a partner in the creation of the world? So Gemara in Shabbos, on Kuf Yud Tet, it says, when a person makes Kiddush, Ki'ilu nasa shutaf l'Kadosh Baruch Hu b'maaseh bereishit. Why? Well, why is that? So he says that the answer is, that's one of the explanations that he gives, one of the proofs that he gives, is that when you make Kiddush, you're part of that infusion of energy into the world, which creates the world for another 7 days. You become part of the creation of the world.
You don't see anything in the text in Bereishit itself.
There is something. There is something. I believe he uses the word la'asot. When Hashem, here, vayivarech lehem et yom ha'shvi'i, vayikadesh oto kivo shavad mikom melachto, asher bara Elohim la'asot. Every parish tries to figure out, what does this word la'asot mean? It's totally superfluous. What does it mean, la'asot? The English over here, what does it say? Where is it? Here. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, having ceased on it from all the work of creation that God had done. No, that's not what, I mean, take out the word la'asot and the pasuk works perfectly. Kivo shavad mikom malachto asher bara Elohim. Or you don't even need the whole phrase. Like, what does the phrase mean? Kivo shavad mikom malachto. What does this mean? So every parish gives a different answer. Now, Ramban famously says that this word la'asot shows how Hashem created the entire 7,000 years of history on that first day. That's one idea. I believe, though, if we look at the Archaim, I think we have it here. I think his explanation is this idea. Let me just take a look. Here. It needs an influx that will sustain it and keep it going, like eating and drinking. Here, by the way, he quotes the Zohar. The Zohar says, "B'yom haShabbat mishtalshel haShefa shel kol sheshet yemei haMaaseh." On Shabbat, all the 6 days of creation come in, meaning there's a new Shefa, there's a new influx.
By the way, Rabbi Sachs mentions, I'm not sure what his source is for this, that the word last thought could be used to refer to evolution. Just as God created the world, last thought it continued to be developed and evolved.
Yeah. He also says that there's an implication that Hashem does something on Shabbat. So what is it that he's doing? So his answer is that he's giving energy for the world to continue to be to be sustained. But I can send you the whole Or HaChaim. I don't want to go through it now. It's very long, actually. I want to do one last thing with all of you. This year, I'm learning the Ketav Kabbalah. It's a parish of Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. I'm quite excited about it. Martin, you in particular would really enjoy it because he's kind of like the Malbim. He's like a less famous version of the Malbim. In the sense that he's very, very big into explaining the meaning of words, and especially proving that Chazal had a very, very deep insight into grammar and vocabulary in the Torah. And so he pulls the words apart and show how Midrashei Chazal, that look like they're just Midrashim, are really in the Pshat. That's one of the things that he does. He also quotes the Gra a lot. He was a big Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. So, for example, I wanted to show you just this first one. I hope to send this out on Shtiklach. I really need to get back to doing that. But here he says the word Shamayim. What does the word Shamayim mean? So Rashi says it means Sham Mayim. Means the water is up there. Okay. He says, no. Ulashon Gova Uma'ala. V'chein Shmei Shamayim. Lashon Gova Al Kol Gvoim. Shamayim means above. V'chein B'lashon Shabbatenu Shmi Koreh. Shmi Kora, Vachenu Balashon Aravi, Kamosh Gatav Rav Ibn Ezra, Velini Reshu Lashon Hishtomimut. What's Hishtomimut? What's Hishtomimut? Anybody know?
Is it completion or
placement? No, not at all, no. It means to be awestruck. To be amazed, hishtomemut, so amazed that you're silenced, like being in wonder. The hishtomem is to be like, whoa, I don't, hishtomamti, I don't know what to do. Mean pnu elai v'heshamu, turn to me and you'll be amazed. Al yomo nishmu achronim, on this day they were amazed. Asher sham shamot baretz, this means amazing things. Kiare godol gufim hashamayimim. Gavhan chukoten, mesiloten, emirtoten. When you look at the skies and you see the sizes and the majesty and the way that they move, pulot shnei ma'arot hagdolim shiasimu mishtaram merom meamdam ad omek haaretz mitachat hamidava mispar, the size and the number shehitbu biyitzurim aniflaim aile halo yishtomem al ze viyitpale aleim. And then he's always got some German. Ershtoinin aragadin. I have no idea. He's got a lot of German sprinkled in over here. It's great. It's like Rashi and Belashon Laaz. So he understands that the word Shamayim comes from the idea that when we look up at the sky, we are awestruck, we're amazed and stunned. Lehishtomem. That means like, Lehishtomem means to be skied. Like when you look at the sky, you get that impression. So that's what he says that it means. I thought that was very fascinating. Okay, there's a few more pieces over here, but I see it's 10:05 and I don't want to keep you too late. So we can stop there, I think. It's a good place to stop. There's some other comments here that are really, really, really beautiful. Maybe I'll send them out or something. All right. I wish everybody a good night and Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for...
Thank you.
Thank you for this, Rabbi.